comment on a different story, but it is the news from Capitol Hill that the House yesterday voted down a bill that would have allowed incoming President Trump to target nonprofit organizations as political enemies. The bill did get a majority of the vote, but it failed to win the two-thirds majority needed for approval. Can you talk about the significance of this? The ACLU was involved in really explaining its dangers.
Yeah, I mean, we were involved with a coalition of groups that's vehemently opposed to giving that kind of unilateral power to the executive branch to start going after nonprofits. I think it's a very dangerous situation when you're starting to give the Treasury Department the ability unilaterally, without any real due process, to start going after nonprofits they disagree with. The bill could come back, so we're not going to rest. But you're right, it did get a majority, and so that's very scary.
Legal Earn, I want to thank you for being with us. Deputy Director of the ACLU Immigrants' Rights Project, arguing some of the most high-profile immigration cases during the first Trump administration, including one to stop Trump's family separation policy. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. As we turn to Arizona, where voters on Election Day approved a sweeping ballot measure that would allow state and local law enforcement to arrest immigrants suspected of crossing the U.S.-Mexico border outside ports of entry, while empowering state judges to order deportations. The new law, which creates a series of state crimes targeting immigrants, is modeled after a similar measure in Texas known as SB 4 that's currently under review by the U.S. Supreme Court. Only certain portions of Prop 314 are scheduled to go into effect later this month, while the most harmful parts of the new law won't be enforced until the Supreme Court rules on the constitutionality of Texas's SB 4. The measure's drawn comparisons to Arizona's controversial SB 1070, the 2010 law that also gave local police authority to arrest immigrants suspected of being undocumented. SB 1070 was largely struck down by the Supreme Court. While over 60% of Arizona's voters back the anti-immigrant measure, a separate historic initiative also passed by a landslide, enshrining the right to an abortion in Arizona's constitution. Donald Trump won the presidential race in Arizona, getting 52% of the vote. But Arizonans also elected Democrat Ruben Gallego, who beat the Republican Trump ally Carrie Lake in a closely watched Senate race. For more on all of this, we go to Tucson, Arizona, where we're joined by Alejandra Pablos, longtime reproductive and immigrant justice community organizer targeted by Immigration and Customs Enforcement for her pro-choice activism and faced deportation proceedings for over a decade. We welcome you back, Alejandra, to Democracy Now! So if you can explain what's going on in Arizona right now, votes for the anti-immigrant bill and for the pro-abortion bill, votes for the Democrat Gallego and for Trump.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you, Democracy Now!, for having me back. It's a pleasure. Thank you to all our friends and organizers who are resisting every day. It's a lot that you're bringing up. It's chaotic, I know, just to be in my body every day. It's super, super traumatic. As someone who's been fighting detention, deportation, have been sharing my story of having abortions, of being incarcerated, I definitely feel the chills. I've been under technological surveillance, retaliation. I've been doxxed. I cannot say that I don't feel the chills. But I also know that we've been here before. I also know that for a long time we've been moving to the right. People say to the center on immigration. But really, voters voted for this because they called it a border security issue. And that's not really what it was. It is a racial profiling, right? It is a way to distort criminal charges already and use them for immigration. It is a way to use our state resources to already scare and make our people more desperate. What we want is a stable economy that is has dignity and prosperity for all of us, working people, migrant people, racialized people. And I think there's just a lot of confusion, a lot of rhetoric, because again, we are, all of us are not having our basic needs met. I think in a moment where Gallegos wins, beats Carrie Lake, but Trump wins, it is chaotic. There's a lot of nuance to that, right? People are not going to vote for a woman either. So the misogyny is just like right in front of our face. I'm so glad that, the Prop 1319, the ballot measure for abortion access, passed. But still, it is not enough. It is another state-based Roe v. Wade, which we know is going to be attacked still. And it's really unfortunate to be right now in this moment having to organize with familias, having to organize rapid response networks, defenses of committee, working with people on the ground, trying to inform folks on their rights and what they could do to protect each other. Because for a long time, we've been doing that. You know, a lot of us cannot trust the police. We see the harms of police and ICE collaboration. And I think the administration right now can do so much more to protect me and other people, activists who've been speaking out. You know, last time when Trump came in to his presidency, he immediately deported and targeted Maru for her activism, right? Que viva la resistencia, shut down Northwood Detention Center. And we don't know who they're going to be targeting immediately, right? Myself, with my deportation case, I'm still in limbo. And I know the administration right now can do more. They can close cases. They can, you know, stop using technological tech to give it to ICE to start targeting and deporting us. So there's just so much right now that we need to talk about. And unfortunately, the Democratic Party didn't do enough to be the opposite of Trump, right? Show us an opposite to the vision that Trump is giving us. So,
and yet, Gallego won.
Pray for us.
And yet, Alejandra Rubén Gallego won. He'll be the first Latino senator representing Arizona.
Yeah, and I want to be very careful that, you know, not just being Latino represents us. I love that Rubén Gallego is now my new target. And our new target, we expect Rubén Gallego to do a lot to protect people in Arizona and to fight for people. And we will be holding him accountable. Absolutely.
So then explain Prop 314 that did get voted for, how it's divided in two parts. Part of it goes into effect soon and the other part the Supreme Court has to weigh in.
Yeah, I mean, this is a copycat of what's happening in Texas and Texas as before, right? Those really punitive measures, I think, are still being reviewed at the Supreme Court. But we also know who and what the Supreme Court is made of. And it's not a friend of ours. We've been seeing the Supreme Court also moving more to the right, taking away our rights. So we see that it is going to pass. And like you're saying, there will be already, as soon as the end of November, many of these parts of the Prop 314 actually go into effect, which is attacking benefits, right? Really, again, the fear has already been inflicted now, whether this passes, some of it doesn't, some, you know, the fear is already there. And also the conflict between even families, right, that sometimes we see people voting for Trump, that means you're voting against us, right? So I myself trying to give everyone a little bit more grace because of how desperate and how our communities right now all want safety and an economy that is really for the people and not for the rich and for Trump's friends.
Finally, Alejandra, explain your own situation as a pro-abortion activist. You felt targeted and were detained.
Yeah, I think, again, people who are speaking out are the first to feel the chills. I've been doxxed by, you know, local vigilantes and local, you know, just activists who want to see me deported, who want to see me be separated from my family. abolition in California. And we just actually took a, we went to all the different detention centers in California. There is still 7, although there was 16, and people organizing there have shut them down. But we also traveled to Whiskey 8, which is an open-air detention center. And our colleagues there have been supporting people and making sure that those people have what they need. And it is getting really, really hostile at the border, right? They're going to continue building that wall. They're going to continue to have people just outside, pushing people outside of the ports of entry to ask for asylum, right? That's what's already happening, and that's what they're threatening to do more of. So we're really seeing that, again, the most impacted people are coming from where we're denying migration is as African countries, South and Central America, and Southeast Asian. And we really need to, again, show up for those folks and really be ready to welcome folks. It's really unfortunate that also in Tucson, we're talking about not supporting and people that are coming, not supporting refugees. The sentiment of, like, close the door behind me, that's our job right now, to fight and to talk about all of us need our basic necessities met. And also, it's really irresponsible that we don't talk about what the U.S. government and policies have been doing to cause people to migrate. A lot of people have been coming because, again, we have intervened and we have really criminalized and created police and more prisons in other countries. And we have to really understand, like, we can't be forcing people out when literally this could be a safe haven for a lot of people. And we're reuniting with our family members. And like it was said previously, we're going to be separated from our families. There are going to be children that are U.S. citizens that are going to be also impacted. I think the workers are going to be impacted the most as well. In Tucson, Arizona, we're working with the Southside workers. Derechos Humanos is organizing familias, right, to just even share information. We want to be able to also spend the holidays with our families, but instead we have to organize forums. We have to start writing, you know, protecting our property and writing papers for notary to protect. Like it's a lot of things we have to do, and we don't want to do that. That's really unfortunate that Trump is going to continue this rhetoric and continue to put us on high crisis alert. Super traumatic. My three-year-old nephew said, "What? Trump is going to be mean to people." 3-year-old kids are knowing what the trauma is like, you know, and like that's what we're going to grow up, little bodies being traumatized by racism.
Alejandra Pavlos, I want to thank you for being with us. Reproductive justice community organizer and storyteller based in Tucson, Arizona. Targeted by ICE herself for her activism and faced deportation proceedings for over a decade. Coming up, we look at Trump's pick to head the EPA. Former New York Congressmember Lee Zeldin long opposed environmental regulations. We're also talking about moving the EPA out of Washington. People say it's not a relocation. It's a decapitation. Stay with us.
Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, "If you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free." Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven.
Your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore, by John Prine. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. As Donald Trump quickly moves to name his cabinet, we turn now to look at his pick to head the Environmental Protection Agency, former New York Congressmember Lee Zeldin. The Long Island Republican served 4 terms in the House, where he earned a score of just 14 out of 100 from the League of Conservation Voters after consistently voting against critical environmental protections and clean energy job investments. Zeldin's nomination came after the New York Times reported Trump's transition team is discussing moving the EPA headquarters outside D.C. Nate James of the American Federation of Government Employees told Politico many career EPA officials would leave the agency if it moves, adding it could be advertised as a relocation, but really it would be decapitation. We go now to Judith Enck, who served as EPA regional administrator under President Obama, now president of Beyond Plastics. We're speaking to her outside Albany. Hi, Judith. Thanks so much for joining us again. Can you talk about, as both a former EPA administrator and a person from New York, where Lee Zeldin was a Congress member for years, talk about what a Zeldin heading the EPA looks like?
Well, Lee Zeldin at the helm at EPA will be a wonderful tenure for fossil fuel companies, plastics companies, chemical companies, but it's going to be really bad for people who want to breathe clean air, drink water that doesn't have toxic chemicals or lead in it. And I'm particularly concerned about what a Zeldin EPA would mean for environmental justice communities, places like Cancer Alley in Louisiana, places like Appalachia in Texas, where there's a concentration of petrochemical facilities. And today, there is not enough environmental protections in place. I'm glad you mentioned Lee Zeldin's tenure in Congress, where he had the not very impressive score of 14% voting record when he was in Congress. But let's go back even further. Some people don't know that Lee Zeldin was a state senator in Albany, and his record was so bad that a statewide environmental group gave him the distinguished 2011 Oil Slick Award. And he earned that Oil Slick Award because he introduced bills that would have, for instance, reduced funding for mass transit, provide dirty water in his Long Island district. And he just really stood out when he was in Albany. And then he took that environmental perspective to Washington, where his record was equally bad. I do want to talk a little bit about his run for governor against Democrat Kathy Hochul, because some people are saying it kind of doesn't matter what Zeldin's policy positions are, because he's just going to do what Donald Trump tells him to do. But make no mistake, Lee Zeldin is in lockstep agreement with the Trump administration anti-environmental agenda. When he was in Congress, he did a few good things that'll be interesting to watch. Very few. He opposed offshore drilling in the Atlantic Ocean. I don't know what that means, though, for offshore wind development. He was a member of the Republican Climate Solutions Caucus, and they never did anything. And in breaking news, he supported protections for shellfish in Long Island Sound. Those are the only three positives that I could dig up on his environmental record. So I have to agree with the guest from the ACLU who said this is going to be worse than anything we have ever seen at the EPA.
And talk about Project 2025 that Trump disavowed, but that as soon as he was elected, people were saying, of course, this is what the plan is. Talk about the plan, including over 150 pages with, and to say the least, damaging environmental plans.
Yeah, this is very concerning. Project 2025 is 900 pages, and 150 are dedicated to anti-environmental policies. Project 2025 calls for disbanding the EPA Office of Environmental Justice, disbanding the office at EPA that deals with enforcement of critical environmental laws. They want to speed approval of chemicals. They want to weaken the Clean Air Act by removing the essential part of the statute, which requires the EPA to set health-based standards when regulating air pollution. The plan uses phrases like the perceived threat of climate change. They want to shut down climate research, not only at the EPA, but at a dozen federal agencies. They want to see more fossil fuel development on public lands, not just private lands. So they're advocating for drilling in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and also drilling for fossil fuels in Minnesota's Boundary Waters wilderness areas. And finally, all of us, unfortunately, have learned about the tremendous health damage caused by forever chemicals known as PFAS chemicals, where EPA plays a major role. Something EPA finally recently did was classify PFAS chemicals as a hazardous substance. So it was kind of a no-brainer. And this plan wants to reverse that.
Finally, I want to ask you about moving the EPA out of Washington. Is this just a geographic thing, or what would it mean with so many people obviously not moving?
Well, I think it's not efficiency. I think it's an effort to drive out the long-term career employees that work at the EPA office. I want to point out there are 10 regional offices all over the country. But the role of the Washington office is to essentially establish the rules of the road when it comes to pollution. How much air toxics are we allowed to breathe in Cancer Alley? What toxic chemicals will be in our drinking water? So I really don't think this is about government efficiency. I think this is about terrorizing the career staff at EPA, making their life harder, distracting them, and most importantly, taking them away from their day jobs, which is strictly enforcing environmental laws.
Judith Engel, I want to thank you for being with us, former EPA regional administrator under President Obama, now serving as president of Beyond Plastics. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show talking about the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. It's entered its third day. On Tuesday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres issued a dire warning.
The sound you hear is the ticking clock. We are in the final countdown to limit global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius. And time is not on our side.
Many climate activists have criticized the decision to hold the talks in Azerbaijan, an authoritarian petro-state. Azerbaijan is also facing accusations it's using the climate talks to make future fossil fuel deals. Well, the group Global Witness has released a secret recording of Ilnur Sultanov, the chief executive of the climate talks known as COP29. An undercover investigator with Global Witness posed as a fossil fuel investor and held an online meeting with Sultanov during which he discussed possible fossil fuel deals.
As I said, we have a lot of pipeline infrastructure. We have a lot of gas fields that are to be developed. We have a lot of green projects that SOCAR is very interested in. There are a lot of joint ventures that could be established, potential joint ventures. Our SOCAR trading is trading oil and gas all over the world, including in Asia. So to me, these are the possibilities to explore.
Those were the words of Ilnur Sultanov, the chief executive of the UN Climate Talks in Azerbaijan. We go now to Leila Stanley, interim head of fossil fuel investigations at Global Witness, joining us from Philadelphia. Leila, thanks for being with us. So talk about the significance of what he admitted to your group, albeit he thought he was talking to a fossil fuel investor and thought he could make a deal during the UN Climate Summit that he's heading.
That's right. Thanks so much for having me, Amy. So let me just set the scene for your listeners. As many folks probably remember, last year, the climate conference was hosted by another petrostate, the United Arab Emirates. And we found that over the year that the UAE held the COP28 host position, its state-owned oil company sought out close to $100 billion in new oil and gas and petrochemical deals. And given that Azerbaijan, also a petro-state, most of its revenue coming from oil and gas, is hosting this year's climate conference, we thought we wanted to see if something similar might be happening this year. So as you say, we went undercover. We posed as a fake oil and gas investor, and we reached out to the COP29 team behind the climate conference. And what we found was that in exchange for just the promise of sponsorship money, that got us to the heart of the COP29 team. We spoke with people who introduced us to a senior executive at the state-owned oil company of Azerbaijan, that's SOCAR. And we were introduced, as you say, to Ilnur Sultanov, the CEO of COP29, also the deputy energy minister of Azerbaijan and on the board of SOCAR. And in speaking with our investigators, Sultanov said that COP is not about oil and gas, but then he pitched Azerbaijan as a growing gas producer, and he described an energy future in which fossil fuels would feature, in his words, perhaps forever.
Let's go to that clip, that same call, Sultanov saying that oil and gas would be produced perhaps forever.
So definitely in a couple of years, I think the production levels will start declining, not now, not next year. Mm-hmm. And even with net zero, we will have a certain amount of oil and natural gas being produced, perhaps forever.
So if you can talk, Leila, about what this means for the UN Climate Summit. You have countries pulling out, saying these are not worth it. And yet you have thousands of activists who come from the most hardest hit parts of the planet saying this is our last hope.
Yeah, a couple of things. So first, I want people to remember that the UN Climate Conference, the COP process, it is the only game in town when it comes to rallying global efforts to avert climate breakdown. And that's the point of these conferences. And so that's why it's so shocking to me that the COP executive, Sultanov, would allow the conference itself to be essentially hijacked by oil and gas interests looking to use it as another business opportunity. At the same time, we can't lose sight of how essential this process is. I think the recent election results in the U.S. underscore how essential it's going to be more than ever to have a functioning international process to stop climate breakdown. And we can't afford to give up on COP. What we can do is force fossil lobbyists out of COP. We need the U.N. to ban petro interests from sitting at the table, from influencing the COP. Last year, our analysis showed that there were over 2,400 fossil fuel lobbyists at the climate conference, and that was more than almost any individual country's delegation, save one, I believe.
So if you just referenced what's going on in this country, in the United States, talk about Trump once again saying he's going to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord and what that means.
Yeah. You know, you can't talk about the state of climate now and the state of climate diplomacy now without acknowledging America's role as historically the biggest emitter, as Joe Biden's role in overseeing a huge expansion of crude oil exports, and now Donald Trump's commitment to removing us from the Paris Agreement and from international climate diplomacy. It's a huge blow to the climate movement. It is also one country. And I think that really underscores how essential having this functioning UN climate process is, and how important it is for the host country of COP29, for Azerbaijan, to do its job and ensure that the talks this year are moving us forward toward that goal of averting climate breakdown.
Finally, what has been the response of the head of the COP, Sultanov, to your expose?
So we made multiple efforts to reach Sultanov again, to try to reach the COP29 team, SOCAR, and they didn't respond to any of our outreach or requests for comment after the fact.
Leila Stanley, we want to thank you for being with us, interim head of fossil fuel investigations at Global Witness. Democracy Now! Will be reporting live from COP29 in Baku, Azerbaijan, all next week from November 18th to November 22nd. Tune in to democracynow.org. Happy birthday to Ishmael Darro. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder. Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, and Hannah Elias. Our executive directors, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grand, Dennis Moynihan, David Prue, Dennis McCormick, Matt Ely, Anna Osbeck, Emily Anderson. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
CJSF 90.1 FM would like to remind listeners that the following program is a repeat broadcast.